Hi, I'm Corey Raven, and welcome to Crosstalk Podcast, where we do our part to inspire recovery from addiction and discover a better way. Whether you're considering a life free from substance dependency or are already on that path, Crosstalk is here for you. Each episode, we do a deep dive into the stories and experiences of people who have walked the walk of recovery alongside experts in the field to enhance our understanding of addiction and recovery. Our mission is simple: to help you navigate the challenges and celebrate the victories along your personal journey to a better life. So buckle up and let's hit the road together as we embark on this transformative journey. This is Crosstalk Podcasts. And I want to welcome our guest, Michael Cardinale.
I'm just so excited to have you and to hear more about what brought you, you know, here today. So, with that said, you know, before we go to like the nitty gritty good stuff, tell us a little bit about how you grew up and where you grew up.
So I grew up in New Jersey, which is like not anything unique in Florida. You know, for the most part, I'm just kind of like a transplant. To me, it's like more unique when I've met somebody who's like actually grown up in Florida. But I grew up in like a middle-class family in New Jersey. I'm the youngest of three, two parents. My dad was a superintendent at a high school. My mom worked as an office manager for an orthopedic surgeon's practice. And I have two older siblings. My brother is 6 years older than me, and my sister is like 18 months older than me.
Close with both siblings?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we grew up in a close household. So I'm Irish and Italian, which is just like the New Jersey combo. You know, that's just what it is. Most people where I grew up are the same thing. A lot of my childhood was based in just a lot of family parties, things like that. When I go to the beach with my Irish side of the family, it's like 40 people packed in the house. So like if you're sleeping there at night, you're like stepping over bodies to try to go somewhere. So there was a lot of family together all the time.
Irish may run in the family that you drink.
Yeah, so I would say that on both sides of my family, alcoholism, addiction is a present thing. In my immediate family, out of my siblings, I'm the only one who struggles with any substance use. My mom is in the same camp as me.
Okay. So tell us what it was like growing up.
So I would say growing up, it was fairly normal to me. I didn't want for anything. We were not lacking for anything. We did family vacations. But I would say for me, for the most part, and my family would agree, as a kid, I would always kind of take an easier way out if there was one. So in school, I would say that the summary of my report cards were like, would have done better if he applied himself. And that's just like kind of what it was. And I typically didn't apply myself because I didn't really need to. I could sit and just kind of absorb the information and do what I needed to. My two siblings are the complete opposite. So my brother's incredibly smart. He's a PhD. He did that in biology. He's a professor at Rutgers and just loved school. And that's what he did. Wow. So he went through school and Dan was always like the student. My sister, same thing. She had to work a lot and you know, she had some learning disabilities, same as me. But she put in the effort and would do those things. Same thing. Great student. I would come through and they'd be like, oh, you're Dan's brother, your sister's or your Kate's brother. And they'd be like, so what happened to you? Like, why are you not doing what they did? And that never really bothered me because I was like, well, I don't really want to be like them because that's just, I don't need to.
Uncool.
It was kind of uncool. It was also just like, I was just lazy. I didn't want to put in the effort.
Yeah.
So like I was raised Catholic too. I would go to church. And that was kind of the same thing of like that required effort to like have a relationship with God. And I just didn't particularly want to do that. So unfortunately, most of my life in the beginning was like, if I didn't feel like doing something or it didn't stack up to what I thought was important or required effort that I didn't want to put in, I just didn't do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what Cliff Notes were?
Yeah, I figured that out pretty quickly too.
And did you use those instead of reading the whole book?
No. Typically what I did is I would wait until like the last week of summer and then I'd have to read like three books and I would get it done. Mm-hmm. But it was the same thing every year. My mom would be like, why do you do this? I'm like, that's a really good question. It's just because it's working.
It's exactly what I did.
I did the Cliff Notes. I could never read three books in a week. It takes me quite a while to read too.
Yep.
That's incredible, though, that you would get it all done, like, at the last minute.
Yeah, I would wait until the 11th hour, and that was just what it was.
Wow, incredible. So, you have a pretty great job, and you're smart, so I guess it worked. So then, were substances introduced at a young age?
Yeah, I mean, I think drinking in my family was always present. It was always at family events. And I think for me, I always associate it with like a good time and what would happen when we would all get together, holidays, vacations, things like that. I never particularly saw anybody abuse alcohol when I was growing up, but I would hear rumblings of family members who had struggled with it. But like any good Irish family, we never talked about that. Our family rule was like, there's no issues here. You just sweep it under the rug.
Right.
So, you know, my Irish side kind of operates like that. My Italian side could be a little different, where there could be an epic blowout argument for 20 minutes, but 5 minutes later, everything's fine. So I kind of got both extremes with that. But how I got introduced to, you know, substances was, I guess I was in the seventh grade and I started drinking, and, you know, like real smart kids, we didn't have anything to like mix it with or chase it with. So we only had food. So we would drink gin and then eat a Fig Newton. And that's how we got through that. And that was the first time I had ever drank. And I was like, yeah, this is a pretty good time. I could do this more regularly.
Fig Newtons?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know it's not, I have no way to explain it. It was just what was around. That's what we did.
Yeah, well, we've never had anybody on Crosstalk that had problems with Fig Newtons.
Well, it's a first for everyone. So, you know, then you graduate high school, I assume. And what happened?
I graduated. Same thing. Did okay. Put in minimal effort with it. My parents at one point sat me down and were like, so are you going to go to college? Do you have plans with that? I was like, oh, I have no idea. So they were like, well, you should probably do something with that. So I applied to a couple schools where you just like needed a pulse to get into, because I was like, I guess I should do it. I don't have plans to do anything else. And that was an introduction into something where like my whole family was concerned of me going to school because they knew it was going to be like no supervision, unrestrained. And within my first night there, I had done enough to where like the next day I had to have a follow-up conversation with the dean, and then I got put on probation. And quickly after that, I applied to go to another school.
So I have a question just to, before we go to the next school. When you were drinking, what was the reason that you drank? Because it just made you feel good? Or was it a social lubricant? Or was it, were there other reasons why you liked it?
That's a good question. I think it was multiple. I think definitely it was a social lubricant. And from the first time I ever drank, I just liked how it made me feel. And there was no off switch with that. If there was alcohol around, like I was going, you know, into it every time.
Did it facilitate more friends or less friends? More girlfriends, less girlfriends?
I think it facilitated more of just the lifestyle of like, I found a group of, you know, younger kids like me that just did not give a shit. And we just wanted to have fun. And that's how we decided to have fun.
Just turn it up.
Yeah. And then just go and do some not very smart things.
Okay. Because, you know, that's a lot of times you hear that it, you know, I felt like I was a better dancer. I was funnier.
Or
I
took away some anxiety.
Yeah.
I think for me, it definitely took away some anxiety in that, you know, even as an adult. I mean, this is the first time I've done a podcast, right? So like, even leading up to this, I'm like, okay, I have to talk about myself, which like anybody in my personal life is like, Michael is the most closed mouth person ever, like does not talk about him or his stuff. And it's not so much that like there's an embarrassment with it for me. Like, I think I'm just kind of a shy individual. But when I would drink, no, that was something else completely. That shyness definitely left me.
Are there any events that you can remember that really stick out that you were like, I shouldn't have done that, or that was a major consequence, or I might have a problem, or like getting, you know, the dean getting you in trouble?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you choose to just be avoidant and like apply to another school. Was there a thought that came across your head like, maybe I have a problem, or maybe things need to change, or any of the above?
So I think probably the first time, if I can reflect back on it, where like, you know, most people would look at that and think like, there's a problem there. I was probably a sophomore in high school, and I had already had a consequence where like I had gotten so intoxicated, I required like hospitalization. And there was no thought of like, wow, that was bad. I probably should stop. There was a thought of like, okay, maybe I need some parameters, but like, why would I not go back and do that? That was fun. Nothing at the end of the day
happened. Be a little smarter next time.
Yeah, exactly. How could I control it? How can I not have it be so, you know, detriment, you know, I guess go to a spot where like, I have to be hospitalized. Could I get that close to where I don't, but could still do it as much as I wanted.
Right.
when my family or people would express concerns, I'm just like, you guys are just like wet blankets. Like, and there's none of that. And also, like I said, like I in that age too noticed, and I asked her beforehand too, and my mom's great. I was like, Mom, if I go and do this, are you okay if I talk about you a little bit and kind of your drinking? She was like, yeah, absolutely. I noticed my mom's drinking escalated when I was in high school. So to me, I'm like, you know, she's doing it. Everything's fine. Why do I not have to? If she's especially telling me, I think you have an issue. I was like, yeah, I think you do too.
Right, right.
And that's exactly how that conversation would go.
And was it the kind of thing where because both of you were doing that, you let each one of you let the other one kind of go?
Yeah, unfortunately, there was a lot of that of like, it would be hard for her to kind of challenge me and vice versa. And I think who I probably felt the most bad for. So like as the youngest, none of my siblings were in the house anymore. Uh-huh. So it's my parents and me. You know, I probably felt the worst for my dad in that situation because he's just stuck in the middle and he cannot win.
He's watching a ping pong game.
Yeah, exactly. And we were absolutely ping ponging him back and forth.
So you were maybe like enabling each other. Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm.
Getting in trouble the first night was something where, like, I remember the next day, I had a lot of consequences with that. I had to see a substance abuse counselor at the school. I had to go and talk to them weekly. My family knew about it, and nobody was surprised. And that was kind of like the worst part. Like, my parents were upset. They were angry. But what was worse is that they were disappointed of, like, it took you one night, and this happened.
And so, it was just alcohol or drugs as
no,
well?
No, it was just alcohol.
Okay. Yeah. Are you just alcohol?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I used some other substances, but for me, my main thing was alcohol.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that's the one thing that I found myself, and kind of like we talked about, that just was my solution to it. Yeah. So after I got in trouble, I quickly figured out a way to get out of that. Surprisingly enough, too, I got a scholarship to go to the other school, which made my parents even more pissed because they were like, well, you are treating this like it's just a free ride. And I was. So I didn't even tell him I applied to another school. I just did it, got in, and was like, there we go. So now you can't tell me no, I can't go.
Right. Oh, my God.
Was it further away from home?
Yeah. So I went to school originally in New Jersey, and then I went to a school in Pennsylvania. It was a pretty small school, like maybe 2.5 hours away. And my parents let me go and they were like, well, maybe the change of scenery will do something and it'll help. It didn't. I got in more trouble and worse trouble there. And I was politely asked to succeed elsewhere by the end of the semester.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, that's how I like to look at it for myself. It was like, you know, when I had to talk to that dean, she was super nice and was like, look, like I see a problem here. And I don't know if anybody has sat you down and said that. I was like, oh, no, trust me, plenty of people have. And I was like, but I disagree with you. And she was like, cool. So you're going to finish your finals and I need you to leave because I don't want you to stay.
And influence anyone else.
Influence anything else, cause any more issues, all of that stuff.
Plus, you're on a scholarship. Someone's paying for you to essentially F things up.
Oh, yeah.
So, or drop dead on our campus.
Correct. I mean, there was any spectrum of things like a liability.
I forget about liability. This is the lawyer over here. So
I'm sure there were plenty of inputs with it. But I don't actually remember her name. I think it was Dean Rivera. She was one of the first people, though, who like was like, I know that there's a problem here. Like, she did not let up. And she was like, despite what you think, I'm not kicking you out because I don't like you. I really think you need help. And that quickly came up. I left after the end of the semester, and within a couple of weeks, I found myself in really hot water where I was given a choice of you go somewhere and get help or you need to leave.
And was this by the legal system or was this?
This was by my parents who got pushed to the edge, and they luckily had a relationship with somebody who knew of a good treatment center to go to. And they were like, you guys need to draw a line. He needs to go.
So this is when you came back home after the second school, mm-hmm. or partial matriculation, let's say. And the events that occurred had to do with using alcohol and drugs.
Correct.
At home. You
Correct.
Were back home, and they saw you were completely out of control.
Yeah, I had unfortunately put my family in such a position that there were no other options left.
Okay, so was it offered to you as a yes or no, or was it like, this is what's happening and you're going?
So it got to a yes or no. How it started was I woke up the next day, had no recollection of some things that I had done, the scenes I had caused. And my mom is a thoroughbred worker. She never missed a day of work in her life. And I got downstairs and it was past 8 o'clock and she was still there. And I was just like, oof. What the hell are you doing here? And she was just like, you don't remember anything from last night. I was like, no, why? And she was just like, I just don't understand why you can't stop. And I think I had a moment there where I was like, that's a great question. And for once, my smart ass self didn't have an answer to it, because most times I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really don't know why I can't. And, you know, within probably a couple hours after that, you know, they gave me the yes or no. So are you doing this? And
what was the yes or no? That either you get the hell out of the house or you go to treatment.
Yeah.
And that must have scared you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not meant to be on the street in any way, shape, or form. And I have no problem admitting that. Like, that's just not my thing.
You're too pretty.
I'm from middle class New Jersey. Like, yeah. That's just not me. And I'm like, oh, okay, if it's really to that, like, I will go. And I think I had gotten so beat up and I had that really small window that I was more open to it, that it just had to be taken. And we moved quickly from there.
Thank God.
So they had some leverage.
They did. They had all the leverage. I mean, like, what am I going to do? I am, you know, pretty much 20 at the time. I have no resources. I have no degree. I have no nothing. I've been asked to leave a school. Like, I had nothing to play at that time.
So you go and you seek help at some sort of treatment center. And were you willing? Like, how would it go?
So, I mean, I was willing. I didn't miss anything, because another aspect of me at times has been like, I will just yes people at times and then just go do what I want. So I probably should have said that when you're like, so tell me about your upbringing. What were you like? That was the other thing. Like, I would say yes and then just go do whatever I wanted. And I was a model client at a treatment center. I didn't miss anything. I showed up. I would talk. All with the end goal of like, okay, if I just do this, my family will relax and I can come home and I can go back to doing whatever.
So you were superficially compliant.
110%, the most superficially compliant person ever.
And they didn't challenge you?
I mean, my parents tried to do it a bit. The one who challenged me is my sister. So my sister absolutely was the linchpin in this, of like, I had gotten to a spot and my parents had gotten to a spot. They were like, okay, I don't know, maybe he could go back and be successful. And she had her, you know, a really good statement of like, you guys are insane. Like, nothing has changed. This is what he's done his whole life, is just be able to maneuver it and just get his head above water. And then he goes and does whatever he wants. And she was like, no, you need to go somewhere else. And then my parents were like, oh yeah, that's actually a really good point. You're going to keep getting help. And then I got asked to go to another place.
You must really love your sister.
I do, actually. I love my sister to death. In that moment, I was just like, Kate, how are you doing this to me? Like, you're completely undercutting me.
Yeah.
But she knew you really well. She cared about you a lot.
My sister knows me the best. Between her and then I have an uncle. Her and my uncle Tom were probably two people who really gave me feedback better than any. So if I can go on a tangent real quick, my uncle Tom is a no-nonsense guy. He does not mince words. You know, he will, if you're taking too long to explain something, he may start snapping at you.
Your dad's brother?
No, this is my mom's sibling.
Oh, I love people like
that. He's just like, spit it out. Well, give me the headlines. And before I had gotten to treatment, he pulled me aside at a family event and was like, take a walk with me. And he was giving me some input of like, look, you know, nobody else is going to tell you this in this family. He's like, you're not doing well. And I don't know what's going on, but this looks really bad. And I care about you. And you need to figure it out, because we all have stuff we deal with.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's ridiculous, Uncle Tom. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what I've been through. And he had the most famous line ever to me. He was like, get off the cross, you martyr. We need the wood. And then just like walked away. He's like, didn't want to hear my response. Was just like, get over it.
So it's a great line.
It is. It really is. And like, that was something that like years later, I was like, oh man, he was so right. And like, I did not want to admit that at the time, but like between him and then my sister, there were two people that were like, Michael, we're not doing this with you anymore. It's not happening.
Did he make that up?
I don't know. I should ask him.
So you went to another place.
Yeah, I went to another place. I went to a treatment center in Florida, and I continued to get treatment, which was totally necessary. Like, I was not ready to be able to maintain, as they put it, like a sober lifestyle without further parameters with things.
Would you consider that longer term?
Yeah.
So like your first one was like 30 days or something like that, and then you went to more extended care.
Yeah.
And here, were you able to skate through like you did at the other place? How did that look?
I'm smiling because like I did my best to, and I got called out on that very quickly of like, so you're not the first person who's tried to do that. We've seen that before. So like, what are you really doing and what are you really not telling us? And I was like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. They're like, okay, see how that works for you. It didn't work out well.
Mm-hmm.
the stuff came out eventually.
How long did it take?
I would compare it to kind of being like a river where I would meander in and out of being open and then not. So it was kind of a process with that, yeah. Depending on what was going on. And if I actually was moving towards some other level of motivation, I would be more open. And then there were other times that I would go back to my normal thing of like, did I really want to stop? And I think, you know, a difficult part in treatment was like, you know, you don't have much of a say. Right. Like you're there, you need to be, you're being told what to do. You're doing this, you're doing that. And that was hard compounding on everything else. Of then I have many people telling me like, you can't drink anymore. And for me, I wanted to live more into like my ambivalence of like, well, what's wrong if I'm questioning it? Like I'm trying to figure it out. I'm 20 at this time.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough that I got connected in AA and I got a sponsor and he told me like, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'll help you figure it out and you can make an informed decision.
Yeah.
He's like, I wouldn't recommend it. And he's like, but it's your choice. And once somebody gave me a little bit of just gray in that, I was like, okay, I could go with that.
Yeah.
I could live in that a little bit more.
So is that when you really started to like accept kind of or be open to this lifestyle more?
I think if I had to pick a moment of like, when did something really pivot kind of and like mm-hmm. something really got through, it was probably doing step work. And I did a fourth and a fifth step. And, you know, I'm looking at resentments, you know, why I was angry at people, why I was resentful at the world. And to sit down and break those down and look at it with a person who's completely neutral. I did not know this guy at all before I came down here. And for him to point out, like, so there's a pattern here of like, you expect a lot from people and yet there's no expectations for you, right? Yeah. Of like, everybody needs to be perfect, but you can do whatever. He's like, I don't understand why and how you can be resentful of people for things if you're doing the same things, but to a worse degree. Yeah. And I think what stuck out the most with that was like, you know, my mom's drinking was really impactful to me. How could I be resentful at her if I'm doing the same thing to her? Doesn't really make sense. And that was a moment I was like, oh, that, I guess I don't have a leg to stand on here.
Right. And did your getting help impact any of the family dynamic, you know, with your mom's drinking or your relationship with your dad?
It did. I was lucky enough that my family was heavily involved in my treatment, both my parents and my sister. So I got sober, and very shortly after that, my mom got sober too, but I didn't know at the time. I
love that. That like gives me such joy.
What a gift.
It really is. And it still is. You know, like I didn't know at the time because I'm in treatment. I can't communicate with anybody. I'm doing the program and the first time I interact with her, I'm still unknowing that she's sober. So I'm thinking like, this is ridiculous. Like I'm here, I'm the one that gets sent and she's still doing her thing. And the clinicians I worked with were smart enough to know what I was going to do, which was I was going to dig into that and I was going to blame her. And
right.
They let me dig a hole for myself before being like, you know, hey, Mary Pat, why don't you tell Michael what you've been doing? She's like, oh, I've been sober for a few months. I have a sponsor. I'm going to meetings. And they were like, what are you doing for yourself? Like, you're not doing anything here, are you? I was like, I guess not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So did she start working with a sponsor before you did?
Probably around the same time, but she did. My mom took the feedback she'd gotten from my clinicians, which was like, if he gets this, and it would be a miracle if he does, based on what he's showing us, if he gets this and you don't, you guys won't have a relationship. So she took that and ran with it and did it. To go back to your question of like, did it shift other things? So it did. Like my mom got sober. My sister finally got pulled out of the middle of being the only sane one of just like, that's too much for somebody in the system.
Right.
She should not be in that role of like telling us how to do things that's too much for her. And my dad needed to learn how does he stop being a ping pong, as you put it before, of like having boundaries.
Right. So it helped everybody.
It did.
So then now, you know, you're getting better. I love hearing about people's kind of road on recovery, which means to me, you know, how are you doing it early on? It sounds like you were going to meetings, you had a sponsor, you were doing the step work. What else were you doing? You know, what did your life look like? How are you finding balance and joy? And were you?
I think I was for the most part. Like I was in a place where like, so I'm doing a lot of, you know, 12-step orientated things. I'm working, you know, trying to figure out what are my next steps? Do I decide to go back to school? You know, trying to get back into the good graces of my family, which was okay. Like I caused a lot of damage and I needed to be able to work to get that back in my life. And I think it was also building a life for myself down here, which was pretty terrifying at 20, 21 of like, how do I do this on my own? Considering I never really lived on my own beforehand. College, I wouldn't really say was living on my own. I just treated that like a good time. So I think it was, you know, trying to build a life of like making friends, getting a support network, and just trying to see like, what do I want my life to look like?
Did there come a time where you went back to school?
There was. You know, I'm lucky that I had the opportunity to go back. I had to jump through some hoops to get back into school. I had to go talk to another dean and then be like, so are you going to do this here? I was like, I really hope not. You know, I'm a couple years into this at this point. If I do, there's something really wrong, and not getting into school is not my biggest problem. But I did. I got to go back to school, and I decided to go back for social work. So I did, you know, my undergrad, and then I did my grad school down here.
Okay. And so, and you became a person who provided counseling to other people.
Yeah. As of now, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I guess I've been doing it for, 7 years now.
Is there something you've heard either from a patient or family or colleagues, a complimentary thing that people have said about you that's been particularly meaningful?
Oof. That's a really good question. It makes me like horribly uncomfortable too. Just like that stuff. Yeah, I know. It's like normally I'm the one who's asking like an uncomfortable question where I'm like gritting my teeth. Something that's like a compliment in that. And
you have to have gotten some compliment over the years.
No, I know I have. I'm just like, I'm trying to think of it. I think something that somebody has given me was, you know, I worked with a lady who, you know, she was like a mentor to me. She taught me how to work with families, how to work with couples, things like that. Somewhat recently, you know, she had said to me, like, you know, you are incredibly consistent in what you do, which may not seem like much, but I think when I had a chance to digest it, I hadn't been consistent with anything in my life. I always wanted just to do whatever was easier and avoid doing something hard. Or I would wait until the 11th hour to read 3 books. So for me to all of a sudden be consistent, and that's how people look at me, that's one thing. And I guess probably the most impactful thing I've had from somebody close to me, outside of, you know, my wife choosing to marry me, which, like, I guess I kind of fooled her into in some ways, right? Which is great for me. You know, my sister didn't talk to me for a long time, and that was earned. I caused so much damage, she didn't want to speak to me. So when I got to the opportunity to make amends to her, you know, I thought this was going to be an amends of, you know, I'm going to tell her how well I'm doing. Here's where I acknowledge I'm wrong. And she's going to be like, great, just keep doing what you're doing. My sister, true to fashion, didn't do that. So, you know, my parents did, other people did, easy amends. She was like, I actually still don't trust you. I think you're full of it. I don't think you're going to be consistent. And like, I don't particularly feel like opening myself up to you again. So, you know, no, I don't really want to talk to you. I was like, well, how am I supposed to like work with this? She's like, well, you can call me. I was like, are you going to answer? She's like, I may not. You know, leave me a voicemail if I don't. So I would call her once a week. Sometimes she would pick up, sometimes she wouldn't. But like, I did that until eventually she actually did start to talk to me.
And I guess, you know, for the people who are watching, what, for especially for young men, what would you say?
I would say that, you know, I love what I do for a living. I love being a therapist. I never thought I would work with families and couples kind of as like my specialty, but I would want young men to be able to know, like, there's nothing wrong with doing this stuff. There's nothing wrong about talking about feelings and asking for help and trying to figure out like, what do I need to do? I think unfortunately our culture so much is just like, we're not allowed to do those things whatsoever. So I would want them to know like, it's okay.
And I really want to say thank you for coming and thank you for doing this.
We are honored to have had you on Crosstalk. And I know our listeners are all the better for having listened to your story and to hear some of the enlightening things that you have to say. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it because this is the first time I've done anything like this. And obviously I've known you a little bit more than you, but I've heard so much about you and nothing but good things about this whole thing. So I appreciate you guys letting me come on.
Thank you, Mike.
Wow, that's good to hear.
So we're going to just tell our listeners.
I think that you should do this one.
All right. Well, go ahead. It's very, 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 very important that you like and follow us because we're entitled to it. We're doing pretty good stuff. So like and follow, hit that bell, or as Sergio likes to tell me, smack the shit out of that bell. and give us your comments. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, and we'll do more of what you're looking for, and we'll respond to your comments. And so thanks for watching. And Irene and I thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time on Crosstalk Podcast.